increases that we've gotten. Our noise program currently has two FTE in it, two positions to run the current noise program and administer the statutes statewide. It's taken the brunt of recent budget cuts in the department. Our high was probably five positions to administer the program statewide a few years ago. We're now down to two. The Ways and Means Committee has suggested the addition of one position for a duration of 2 years to facilitate the transition of the noise program from the state level to local levels, to encourage local cities and counties to adopt their own ordinances and to enforce those ordinances rather than having it an emphasis upon the state DEQ to run the programs. So I suppose those factors have merged together that have not prompted us to become overly aggressive in this area. That's not to say that we don't think it's a problem. We do feel there's a problem there. There have been studies. There was an excellent recent PBS documentary on noise damage caused by rock and roll music, both to the musicians as well as to the audience. So I think there's pretty well good documentation that a problem exists. And then comes the question as to how best to address that problem. We think in looking at the bill, taking the regulatory aspect, it would require some unique approaches by the department that we haven't tried before. I don't know whether our traditional reliance upon establishing standards and then requiring permits in advance of a specified activity and then having staff monitor on a random basis various performances and then taking enforcement action. I'm not sure that would be the best way, which has been our traditional way of dealing with air and water and whatnot. I think something could be set up whereby you could administer it. I don't know how effective it would be, and I don't know how much it would cost. It would depend on just how ambitious we wanted to get. We would suggest that if the desire and sentiment is for a regulatory program, that we be serious about that program. I think one of the reasons that some of the pollution laws in the state of Oregon have been as effective as they have been, and in many cases we were not forced into an enforcement action situation, was precisely because the public knew that we were serious about the law and that we had the resources there to take enforcement action if necessary. We said what we meant, and we meant what we said. We could find ourselves in a bind if indeed we're directed to go out and establish regulations in anticipation of a regulatory program and then lacking the resources really to do much about it. We get beat upside the head and shoulders then for having a rule, and people question us, why aren't you out enforcing that rule? So I suppose if we're to take that regulatory approach, if we are talking about limiting the noise, about taking regulatory action, enforcement measures against violations of a standard, then we ought to be serious enough to back that up with the resources to indeed do that type of work. We see one of I guess this has been touched upon already, but we see one of the great advantages to the bill already coming to this point in the process and getting some public attention is the public awareness that naturally comes from that. We have found, as the previous gentleman testified to, that there's considerable public ignorance, particularly among the young, about the loss of hearing. The loss of hearing traditionally comes at the higher frequencies first, and you simply don't recognize it. You don't notice it in the normal everyday conversations. By the time you do notice it, it's simply too late to do a great deal about it. So the more that we can discuss the issue, the more attention that we can focus upon it, I think that the better approach, the better probability we will have in dealing with it, either through a regulatory means or through a voluntary means or simply a public education. I suppose the greatest fear that we have is that in the bill is that if with the current staffing that we have, the current two positions, if indeed we want to get into a regulatory means with performances, and this is just isn't rock and roll music, this could be a concert, some of the symphonies can exceed some noise standards when they hit a high crescendo, just as a rock and roll band can, or a coliseum, or taverns, or wherever music is played, high schools, junior high schools. If we're serious about monitoring that, then we probably ought to look at the resources necessary to do that type of job. Be glad to respond to any questions of the committee.
Senator Whitford.
Don't you have the power really to do this right now? It says to, under present law, the categories of noise emission sources, including the categories of motor vehicles and aircraft, which is added to, but the first one certainly says that the categories of noise emission sources, and you also shall adopt rules relating to the control of levels of noise emitted into the environment of the state, including the following. So you probably have the ability to do this if you wanted to do it, but not specifically.
Madam Chair, Senator Ripper, I suppose it goes back to my initial comment. Most of our environmental rules, and noise included, have focused, when we talk about environment, have been the exterior environment as opposed to the interior. And I suppose from a legal standpoint, we could look at the wording and see whether that's flexible enough to allow it. But I know, at least in terms of administrative direction over the last half dozen years or so, it's when we said environment, it tended to mean out of doors environment as opposed to indoor environment. So I don't know legally whether the language is already broad enough to encompass this or not.
The only thing you look at now is just mills and automobile racing tracks and the airplanes. Is that about the only thing?
Well, we
don't
have
very much at trucks or anything yet, do you?
Senator Ripper, we have a variety of sources that we look at that range from the large to the small, the large being public facilities such as airports, private facilities such as industrial sources, from cement plants to pulp and paper mills, any place that has a lot of exterior machinery exposed to the broad environment, and then down to some very specific cases like motorcycles and automobiles, the latter of which we've been encouraging in recent years local jurisdictions become involved in that as opposed to the state, because we simply didn't have the resources to track down all of the complaints that we receive on motorcycles in a suburban area or automobiles or whatnot. But it really kind of covers the gambit of exterior noise.
Now, you referred to Ways and Means a couple of times. Don't you think maybe perhaps the reason that they haven't felt like funding this program is it has been kind of Mickey Mouse?
Well,
I mean, you know, you're really not going at noise sources. We've known about this sort of thing, and to talk about airplanes flying overhead, you know, we don't have a heck of a lot of control unless they land up there.
Madam Chair, Senator Ripper,
and that's almost comes under the feds anyway.
I think at least the discussions that I've seen at the Ways and Means Subcommittee level was that given the resources that were available, the noise program, as compared to air pollution, water pollution, solid and hazardous waste, was at the lower end of the spectrum, quite candidly. Of those five environmental regulatory areas in the department, that fifth one was the one that I suppose there was less support for than the others, not to say that there wasn't support for it. At least the discussion at the subcommittee level never really focused upon the way the program was administered, whether they're focusing on the right sources of noise or not, but that compared with the others, the primary emphasis would be in the traditional air, water, solid waste, and the rapidly expanding hazardous waste area. That was where the priority
was. I've sat through an awful lot of committee hearings on both down there and up here on environment and energy right from the very beginning. First year I've not been on it since I've been here. Listen to them. But I really think that part of it's been that not every area has a racetrack, and a lot of people don't look at that as being, you know, of big importance in the whole scope of things, so that you haven't had that kind of funding, because the program hasn't been reaching out. Maybe they thought that OSHA got into it rather than you and did the job or something, because OSHA gets out where the chainsaws are in the woods and all of the other things. And maybe that's why they haven't felt the importance of it. But the regulation of such things as music and where I would see far more damage here than I would at the racetrack. And it's hard for me to say if you were going to have a, you know, program, you would look where the most need was, and to monitor. And I use that racetrack because every time I've ever listened to you people, that's what you talk about, is the Portland racetrack. And to me, that doesn't seem to have that much. I don't live up there, so I don't know how often they run it. Or they run it every day, or twice a day, or what. But it still doesn't give me that emphasis to say that that program is out there functioning in an area where it might be best. And I think that's what they were saying to you in Ways and Means, was maybe you ought to have the local police monitor the trucks and things, because we're not looking at the level of depth in depth or whatever it is, or where the problem is. Now, this would sound, again, personal opinion, but this would sound to be far more important to me as far as damage and what's causing to a whole generation of people coming up than all the racetracks that you could put together in the state of Oregon, if you had them all run on one day. What level do you, and I'll ask one more question, so instead of a lecture, I can ask a question at the end. What level, decimal level, do you consider to be damaging at a racetrack?
Madam Chair, Representative Ripper, I can't give you the answer on that. We've got the chart that shows the respective volumes of different types of noise and where we consider that to be harmful to the public, and I can make that information available to the committee.
I'm merely curious about at the level that they talked about, where that it was up to 102 to 116 and decibels, and if it was, where did they have one that was... I don't know what point you break the eardrum, but it's close to that, it said, someplace. And I just wondered if it was any close, you know, if that was the level that you were looking at?
Madam Chair, Senator Ripper, I don't know about those levels as it relates to a racetrack, but those levels, 100...
Or a mill or something like that.
In excess of 100 are certainly over a period of time the type that can be damaging to prompt the loss of hearing. As a matter of fact, the two gentlemen that testified before might probably have a better feel for that than I do. There are levels that are associated with a jet airplane at various distances and whatnot that are already charted out. Most of the research has already been done. We would concur with their earlier testimony that it probably wouldn't be difficult to set those standards. A lot of that work has already been completed, and I think is well recognized, and a lot of concurrence in the community for that.
Well, if you are required by the OSHA to have earplugs, and you could only work 4 hours even with earplugs at 95, and 95 is not awfully, I mean, that's loud, but it's not awfully loud, and you had to have earplugs in it, then it would appear to me that this would certainly be an area that you would not have had any trouble moving into at 115 without earplugs, when that's so far above the standard. And according to one somewhere I left in here, that at from 100 to 110 is twice as loud, as that it is, each one goes by a geometric of 10.
Actually, it's 60.
Will you come up to the stand, please?
Sorry. Excuse me. I realize I'm out of order. Forgive me.
You have to identify yourself again, Dr.
I'm Jack Vernon. Mm-hmm. Every 6 dB on that scale, until you get at the very bottom end or the very top end, is doubling the intensity of the sound.
Doubling.
To make it easy to read, everybody cut it at 5, mm-hmm. because we tend to think in terms of multiples of 5 rather than 6. But it's every 6 doubles the intensity of the sound.
So if I was looking at what was the level that the federal government would allow somebody to work on a chainsaw, then I would be looking almost at a 4 times as strong a sound without any regulation here.
Quite right.
For the same amount of hours.
Quite right.
Stan, would it be very involved for DEQ to set some standards for indoor music level using the OSHA regulations as a guideline?
Madam Chair, we probably would take into account in setting those standards both the OSHA standards and whatever expertise they have in their staff for that, as well as our own staff and the standards that we've already established for other noise sources, as well as members of the community, both mm-hmm. the affected parties as well as a medical community. The standard setting process itself is a fairly open one. We try to put together a committee initially of those that know most about the subject matter to come up with a standard that people feel comfortable with. Then we take that out for a public hearing. Get a wider involvement of affected groups. But I don't think it would be terribly difficult to set a standard, both in terms of the actual noise level, the intensity, and the duration, both of which would have to be taken into account.
Mm-hmm. for the two categories of music here mentioned in the bill, I think the committee would be interested in hearing some standards for the two categories of indoor music. Were you here when Senator Wyers was here?
Yes.
When he suggested that some standards be set, but no regulations or no permits be established, mainly to set some standards and so that the indoor music can be aware of what level is going to be harmful to the public.
Yes. That approach is not dissimilar, I suppose, to what we've done with voluntary standards, although by putting it in administrative rule format, a third party, a proprietor, a neighbor, or whatnot, would have the basis for litigation, whereas they probably wouldn't, or it would be a very difficult case to make with voluntary standards. But that's another option the committee might want to consider is voluntary standards as well, which we have historically not gotten any type of enforcement simply because they didn't have the active law or power of law.
That brings to another question of enforcement. How does if a police department receives a phone call complaining about excessive noise level, how do they go out and find out what kind of decimal level is being done at the concert? Is this something that can be done easily? Do you have a noise level, something that can determine the noise level that's available in the law enforcement office?
Yes, we do. We have the devices already available, and historically we have provided those to local jurisdictions, at least those that were inclined to do some enforcement at the local level. We have calibrated that equipment, we've fine-tuned it and repaired it whenever necessary at no cost to local jurisdictions. That has, I think, helped get the local jurisdictions involved and help relieve some of the burden off of DEQ. In the Ways and Means Subcommittee discussions of this one new position, that was, a considerable discussion focused upon utilizing this position to help with the police departments and the Police Standards Review Board, if I have it correctly, to prompt additional training of local law enforcement agencies for them to be able to pick up and assume an even greater burden. The technology is already there. It's already available, at least in a limited sense, to local enforcement agencies.
Do you mean it takes extra training to be able to use this kind of equipment?
Yes, Madam Chair. You need to understand the equipment, how it's utilized, when to recognize that it isn't functioning properly, so that can be returned to us, whereupon we'll do the repairs and recalibrate it and provide it back to the local jurisdiction.
What kind of training are you talking about? Is this something you can turn it on, set it at the music, and then look at the standard and see whether it exceeds the level or not?
Yes, Madam Chair, you can do precise, relatively precise monitoring on site, and a fairly portable device. You can hold it fairly easily, and it's the sort of thing that has been used for motorcycles, for automobiles, at industrial
applause,
sources.
Oh, you remember those things when they used to check the applause?
Right. Oh.
The same thing.
Fairly commonplace technology, and it's not horribly expensive in case local jurisdictions would like to purchase it on their own.
As I mentioned before, Senator Wyer, who's the sponsor of this bill, doesn't want it to have too much fiscal impacts. So we would like to have some information what standards should be set for music level and how we can enforce it without too much expenses. Senator Henn.
Madam Chair. Mr. Biles, I assume that you have the same capability that you currently do with your Motorsports Advisory Committee. Is that a appropriated function within your agency?
Senator Hannon, do you mean the staff capability to work with such
No, the Motorsports Advisory Committee. Is that a paid function that's paid for by the state of Oregon?
I'm not all that familiar with that particular committee. My guess is that that's a service in a voluntary capacity, maybe reimbursement on food and travel.
I don't think they get any reimbursement, but they serve free of charge, and they're citizens, and each one is from a different motorsports group. One is from motorcyclists, one is from drag strips, one is from oval tracks, and so forth. And they have adopted standards of noise for the DEQ to enforce. Couldn't this be done the same way with restaurants and dance halls and school districts and so forth, on the same principle that was discussed here today?
Madam Chair, Senator Hannon, if we got into the role of setting an administrative standard, I would imagine those respective organizations or types of affected bodies would be the first people that we'd look to put together that type of a committee, because that would be the organizations primarily involved in the oversight probably would know best as to how much and how widespread that type of music is, particularly in an educational system.
Senator Ripper, currently there's a group in Portland called the Motorsports Advisory Committee that's adopted a set of standards for racetracks and racing activities. It's a service of people that have donated their time and effort. And I think we could do the same thing with this without creating a regulation and enforcement. But they've created standards, and DEQ's just now getting to the regulation aspect of it, but they're allowing the local people to do the regulation of it. I think this points up the fact that I think it's an issue that should be addressed and can be addressed, but you don't have to create a bureaucracy to do it with.
I think that this is an area that they could get into and set up standards. And, you know, government's the only place that where you can get a little bit pregnant. Because we always start out very easy, and you don't have any rules or any regulations. I mean, you just set up the standards, and then as times move along, invariably, while we start to get the secondary parts of the fines and stuff. But to get an education process, as you were talking about, you get into it, and we give you the ability just to make sure, and then you set up the standards, and then you work into it. If you see that they're not being met, or as time goes along, you've got an education process going on at the same time, and somewhere along the line, the clubs and restaurants and schools, all the rest of them, are going to have to get in line about that level of noise that they can have.
Madam Chairperson.
Senator Timms.
Are you through?
Yeah.
Senator.
I just have to bring up something today, because this gentleman was in front of Public Finance, and he's the first one that I've ever heard turn down anything, and he turned down pollution control bonds that he didn't need any more of. So it brings me to a question. Maybe you have budgetary restraints in your department. Maybe the emphasis should be placed to maybe other fields now, because evidently you do not need any more pollution control bonds, which were in Senate Bill 238, to allow more of those. I imagine your administrative staff, and as other than the budgetary restraints that are on all departments, have gone down, but still, you do not need this extra bonding capacity. Possibly the pollution field now is turning to where you could point your emphasis towards other departments or other problems in our society as far as noise. Is that possible?
Madam Chair, Senator Timms, that's a broad area, one that's confronting environmental regulators all across the country as we see a shift from the traditional what we've called point sources of pollution more to area-wide, community-wide sources of pollution. As it relates to the Pollution Control Bond Fund, as I recall the statutes, it's limited to the more grandiose words in the statutes, but sewers, solid waste facilities, hazardous waste facilities. I don't believe noise is included.
Well, I understand that, but when you are issuing bonds, if you're issuing more bonds, it takes administrative people to take care of, I think, the granting of those bonds and so forth. If you're doing less of it, it should free people up. I never believe that the bonds can be used for that.
I understand now.
Sorry, I didn't.
Our level and usage of that fund has remained fairly constant. It's not as though we're seeing a decline in the amount of requests coming for local jurisdictions. It's maintained fairly consistent demand on the fund, so we haven't seen any fluctuation in staff up or down. The point I was just trying to make is that we were still had quite a gap in that fund from the 1% to what we have now.
Any further questions? If not, thank you. Will you come back to the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that I've got any information in terms of a standard or appropriate standard that that could be utilized, and then the optional methods of enforcement for that standard.
That's right. Okay. Do we need any information on forming of advisory committee?
I don't think you're interested in putting the standards in here. You're only interested in what type of enforcement. The standards would still be by rule, I would think. But I don't think you'd want to put them into law.
Yeah. But we need the information on the noise levels.
Certainly. Some ballpark figures of what we're talking about.
You can use. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Robert, is this Finley?
Finley, I'm not sure he's here.
Mr. Robert Finley is here. Secretary from Musicians Union Local 99. Mr. Finley.
Madam Chairman, I'm Robert Finley. I'm Secretary Treasurer of the American Federation of Musicians Local 99. And I'm here to neither voice support nor non-support for the bill. We have taken no official position at this time. However, we do have some concerns, and those I'd like to express to you. I have talked with Mr. Roy, Dr. Vernon, and my good friend Senator Wires regarding this measure. First of all, while we recognize the need for good health practices and good preventive medicine, we don't want the restrictions to become overly tight to the point that a performance of the Oregon Symphony could be stopped in the middle of a Berlioz symphony or a Respighi tone poem, and believe me, those do get fairly loud at times, nor do we wish that the establishments that employ our members and others would face a closure or possible other penalties because of overly restrictive rules laid down by DEQ administratively or by the legislature through this law. First of all, I have been a professional musician myself for over a quarter of a century, and by the way, my hearing is excellent. Thank you. I do resent, however, the definition of noise level coupled with music. Noise acoustically has two very specific meanings, one being a sound which includes all vibrations in the spectrum. And you get that when you hear an airplane engine or a saw or a motorcycle. And the other is unwanted sound. And I submit to you that we're talking about neither in this particular bill. You're talking about music, and you're talking about sound and music that is certainly wanted by those that are in attendance at the events where the music is played. We do have ordinances in most communities for leakage of unwanted sound into the community. And in some cases, what we're talking about is not the sound level itself, but the vibrations that are caused by the lower pitched instruments, such as electric bass and drums. But most communities, I believe, or at least the major communities in our state, have that kind of sound pollution, so that ordinance, so that a person in his motel would have the right to complain about the leakage of sound coming from an establishment, even next door. What we're talking about is really a situation where people are enjoying the phenomenon of a musical performance, and whether you or I appreciate it in the same way that the patrons of the establishments do is really neither here nor there. We assume that they're there on a voluntary basis. Complaints from employees are virtually nil. I have no members of mine that have ever complained about the sound level in the bands and the music in which they're performing, the music of the bands in which they're performing. However, they do complain about the tobacco smoke level, and when they have had the temerity to complain, and we've reported it to DEQ, it's been reported back that the smoke levels are entirely admissible. Although my members do complain about eyes getting red and watering and their throats getting dry when they're trying to sing. I don't think that anybody is going to advocate the ban on selling of smoking tobacco, nor are we going to go back to prohibition. And again, I submit that these three activities go on in the same locations night after night. You lost your chance back about 1970 when we allowed music in taverns. And our local, if some of you have been around, was instrumental, pardon the pun, instrumental in getting live music in taverns, and we wouldn't, and we'd fight anybody who wanted to take it out again. We do agree that we need an education.